The Public Safety Finance Committee will come to order. Members, today we've got really two aspects of the Department of Corrections budget that we'll be looking at. One is the performance standards, and you should have a updated version of that. If you had an old one, apparently there were some mistakes that have since been corrected. And then that'll be the first portion of the committee hearing, and then we will talk about short-term offenders, and we have several presenters on that particular issue. So Commissioner Benson, Mr. Storkamp, you're going to walk us through this, I believe. Mr. Storkamp, Commissioner Benson, welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for the opportunity to present today. For the record, I'm Dan Storkamp, Director of the Information and Technology Unit for the Department of Corrections. In addition to the performance report, we also do projections as well as information statistics. So we've got a lot of information numbers that we'll be able to provide you beyond this if you're needing that. Before we begin talking about the performance report itself, I wanted to give you a little background about how we came out with the performance report. The report really is a derivative of our strategic plan. That strategic plan was put together by the commissioner, and she took a lot of time with that and a lot of staff a few years ago. So we kind of set the stage with what direction do we want to go as an agency. In developing that strategic plan, we began a process in 2000. We took 10 months and several staff, and that's staff throughout the agency. So both field service, community service, and institutions and central office. So it was really a comprehensive review of where we wanted to go as an agency. It set the stage for the next 2 years. What we tried doing is setting the vision, the mission, and strategic goals, as well as developing the measures. The mission of the Department of Corrections is to hold offenders accountable and offer opportunities for change while restoring justice for victims and contributing to a safer Minnesota. Our vision and goals, our vision is to focus on reducing risk. And notice FOCUS really is an acronym for the four goals that we're trying to achieve. One, fostering community partnership. Two, optimizing best practice. Three, creating respectful, diverse culture. Four, utilizing effective communication. And five, strategic and effective use of resources. And again, this set the stage, and from there we identified how are we going to measure those components. The performance measures and those measures that I just talked about are reviewed by management on a regular basis. Our per diems, idleness, our percent of staff, minority, and different groups are all reviewed by management monthly. And to see where we are and where we're going. The measures are reported on our website annually. And I think Representative Hillstrom mentioned that yesterday. We do have a site up with our performance measures on. Note that this has not been updated since our new report is out. So this is still 1 year old in data. But we'll be updating that now that our new performance report is out. The performance report that you're talking about, I think you've all got copies. It's the blue one. We do that on a biannual basis per the legislature, and there's also some measures in this report that are also part of our base budget process. The performance report is really broken down into five sections, and I'll be going through each of these sections in more detail as we move forward. But the first is talking about those specific measures that relate to our strategic plan, the five areas of focus. The second is the per diem, and again, Representative Hillstrom mentioned this yesterday, that there's a legislative mandate in how we calculate that per diem, and we'll be describing that as we go forward. Third are the annual performance statistics. Again, this is a collage of statistics that help not only you, but us manage the Department of Corrections. Third, recidivism. Understand recidivism, we produce the overall adult facility annually. It's a general number of recidivism. It helps us measure kind of where we're going. But we do more in-depth analysis every other year on three topics. First will be juveniles, second will be community services, and third will be institutions. And that's done on a six-year rotating basis. Since our report's due every other year, we'll do a more in-depth on each of those topics 3 years consecutively. This year, we focused on the juvenile detailed analysis. And finally, per a statute I think changed last year, there's additional health care programming information that we'll be covering as well. Let's start with the specific five areas of our strategic plan. Fostering community partnership. We've got two measures in this area. One is to increase the number of fugitive apprehensions. And you'll see from the chart that we actually have increased from 2003 and up. Our goal was 300, Mr. Chair. And we've achieved that for 05 and 06.
I think, Mr. Chair, we don't have I don't have the slideshow. I don't know if there's a part in the book that we're supposed to be referring to, but I'm just curious as to what these match.
Well, maybe you didn't get one, Representative Hillstrom. I think we all.
Do you have a copy of the slideshow? We don't have the slideshow, just you.
Yeah, I don't have that either. This side didn't get that.
Oh, yeah, I did.
You don't have a copy of the whole slideshow. They have a copy.
Just hold on for 1 second. We'll get this taken care of.
I apologize for the interruption, Mr. Chair.
I'm just wondering, can you see the screen, or
yeah.
we're making copies of them?
The staff brought us here.
Okay. Okay. I apologize.
I do have four additional copies here as well.
Okay. Can you get those copies and make sure? The page has some extra copies. If you just raise your hand if you don't have one, members. Okay, Mr. Sturkey, I apologize for that. Please continue.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you. Again, Measure 1 was to increase fugitive apprehensions. Measure 2 was to restore victims in the community through partnerships. And we measuring that by the number of offender work hours spent restoring and building in the community. This is our work release, our STS, as well as our ICWC work crews that are out there. You'll notice that there's a decrease between 2005 and 2006. Just a note with that decrease, there was a change in reporting. We have one major county that did not report to us in 2006, and that could be accounted for probably for that difference. The second area is optimizing best practice. And again, we've got three measures in this area. One, to promote use of evidence-based practices throughout the state. One of the key measures here, again, is recidivism. I'll be talking about more of that later, but you can see the chart in the bottom left corner.
Mr. Sturkamp, can we go back to the number of offender work hours spent? Is that MnCorp and related projects? Are you related businesses within the institution, or is it something different?
Mr. Chair and members, it is actually something different. STS crews.
Oh, okay. And the decline in 06 is?
Mr. Chair and members, the decline in 06 is one major county that did not report to us.
Okay. Please continue. Representative Murphy.
So, Mr. Sturkamp, what happens when the county doesn't report, besides that we don't have the numbers, but...
Mr. Sturkamp?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, information that I obtained around this is that the county is not receiving any state funding for the STS crews, and therefore they're not reporting to us based on that. Again, we'll follow up to see what the issue is, but it's a matter of working closer with them.
Mr. Chair, why are we keeping that county's identity secret?
Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, I don't know which county it is at this time. I apologize.
I think...
Representative Murphy?
Mr. Chair, I think maybe we should discover who that county is. how upset they really are.
Mr. Sturkamp, you want to continue?
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. Measure 4 is to increase the offender's participation in reentry services. As you know, this is one of the major initiatives of the department. And you can see between 05 and 06, we have had a 50% increase in the number of offenders participating in reentry classes. And we anticipate that to continue as our MCORP project moves forward. And the fifth area is to reduce offenders' risk and need. The third area is creating a respectful and diverse environment. One, implementing initiatives to resolve employee conflict in the workplace. We've got a, as you can see the bottom left chart, the number of harassment complaints has dropped from 2003 and it's held steady the last 2 years. And we've put in some new programs in the department to help deal with conflict between employees, not only in central office, but in all the facilities. Measure 7 is recruit and retain a diverse workforce. And looking at that, we're looking at the percentage of appointments who are members of a protected work groups, or protected groups. And you'll see we've increased, we've had a slight decrease between 2005 and 2006 in the percent of minority. The fourth area is utilizing effective communication. Measure 8 is improving functionality of the agency's internet, basically wanting people to use the internet more. And you'll notice we had a spike in 2004. That was the year that we had a lot of public interest in the department and some of our offenders. And during that time, we had an extremely large amount of number of hits on our website, looking at all our sex offenders in particular. But as you can see, we're leveling off about a million hits a year.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm going to talk about the next couple of slides.
Commissioner, today. Just 1 second before you say, Representative Dominguez had a question, and Mr. Sturkamp.
In the slide number, measure number 7, recruit, retain diverse workforce, you said that there was a decline. What was the purpose of the declining of that number 7?
Mr. Chair and Representative Dominguez, it was about a 2% swing. We have in all categories we had our turnover increased a little bit between those two fiscal years, and this of course impacts all different categories. And beyond that, we had some terminations. We had people resign. We also were hiring lots of people. And during that process, our experience has been that you hire people and some of them work out, others don't, others believe that this isn't the job that they want to do. So we weren't able to maintain that 7% level, but it is a focus of the department. Our commissioner and the executive team have been doing lots of targeted minority recruiting around the state. We continue to do that. We've also worked very closely with the NAACP with respect to targeted recruiting in the minority area. So it continues to be a priority for the agency, and the numbers are what they are, and we will continue to see this as an important initiative going forward.
Mr. Chair, just to follow up, could you explain maybe what were those jobs and why were they deleted?
Mr. Chair and Representative Dominguez, by and large, it is the correctional officer ranks where we have the greatest turnover rate. In our 10 correctional facilities, it has been averaging around 9 or 10% a year, and it spiked a little bit. It went up to 12 or 13% a year during that period. The one thing that I would point to is that there are many comparable job opportunities out there for all groups, we are trying to compete the best we can. We also lost a lot of folks to the county jail system. The Ramsey County Jail went from deputies running their jail to correctional officers, and we lost a pair of number of people over to that jail. So while they may have left state service, I think many of those people, both minority and non-minority, are probably still in the criminal justice system somewhere.
Just another follow-up, Mr. Chair. What do you have in place to recruit those folks?
Mr. Chair and members, a variety of things. Again, we do targeted recruiting. We go to specific areas around the metro. We have our HR, Human Resource Department, has presentations to schools around the metro. We have put ads in minority newspapers around the metro. We try to advertise. We have minority recruiters that go out and speak to high schools and speak to colleges, and we do presentations at job fairs. So we are out there competing with the rest of the workaday world to try to recruit good employees, both minority and non-minority. So again, we have targeted some of those communities that are culturally rich and trying to bring folks into our employ. And we have had some success, I might say, too, particularly with the Asian community and the Hispanic community in our prison system. So while it continues to be a challenge, because again, this is it's a job that everyone is not cut out for. Some people come, if we get a year or two out of them, we feel good about that, but some of them do move on. Many of them want to be police officers. Many of them go to county systems. Many of them want to be probation agents. We've had people go from everywhere from the CIA to the FBI to many officers we've lost to the St. Paul, Minneapolis PDs and surrounding police departments. So we tend to be a training ground to some extent to the rest of the criminal justice community.
And just another follow-up.
Representative Dominguez.
Thank you, Chair. As far as your balance here from men to women, do you have a chart that we could have that tells you what the recruiting mechanism is and the difference between the men and women being hired?
Mr. Chair and members, Representative Dominguez, absolutely. We track that very closely. Our Human Resource Department puts out a report every quarter. We have a quarterly report that indicates turnover rates of different employees. It would be the different unions, the supervisors, the managers, the line-level union workers, and the breakdown between male-female. The male-female breakdown in our correctional institutions is, I believe it's about 30, around 30%, 30-plus percent female. So it's increasing from what it was certainly even 5-10 years ago.
Representative Easton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have one kind of a clarification question on the same issue there. On the chart there, you said the percent of appointments who are members of a protected group. Does the chart really, does that reflect your permanent staff as a whole, or is that just reflecting your new hires?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair and Representative Eastland, I've been informed that it's new hires.
Would it be possible to get the same chart for the entire staff?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair and Representative Eastland, yes, we can give you that document.
Okay. Please continue.
Again, Mr. Chair and members, I'm going to talk about Measure 10, 11, 12, and then we're going to talk for DMs here in a moment. But the strategic and efficient use of resources is obviously a part of our strategic plan. And you can see the first chart there on the left is the per diem and what has happened to our per diem over the last 4 years. And in 2003, it was at $80.52, and it went up to $80.11. And I can tell you that in 2006, some different things started to happen. Number one, in 2004 and 5, when we were experiencing the serious budget problem, we added beds to St. Cloud and Stillwater in the form of double bunking, and it brought our per diem way down. We added those beds, I think, for around $20, $22 a day, which is a very, very cheap bed. And then in 2006, we started renting beds from, 2005, 2006, we started renting beds at a higher per diem, and so our marginal per diem number increased pretty substantially when we're not adding to existing physical plants, but rather we're renting beds from a private entity. So that drove the per diem up. Now the other thing, I'd like to just put this in perspective. Our per diem in 1996, when Dan and I came to central office, was $87 a day. And I think at its low point there, it was $76.43. So we brought it down by over $11 a day. And in addition to that, we absorbed somewhere around $18 or $20 a day in inflation. So we feel good about that. We went from about 50% double bunking in our department to 80%. That was primarily at the medium custody institutions. We still do double bunk about 225 to 230 at St. Cloud and 110, 112 at Stillwater. Other than that, we don't. Well, Rush City was designed for double bunking, and that's, other than their segregation unit, is all double bunk. So the other thing that obviously impacts per diem is staff salaries. We had that discussion yesterday. In the next biennium, we'll be adding $30 million in costs to payroll. That obviously is not all institutions, but about 80% of it, I think, is institutions. So that is a driver. Healthcare is another driver that really does impact our per diem. We have added and added and added to physical plants, and again, we have been renting. We've got about 978 out of the Prairie Correctional Facility. That per diem is higher when it's averaged in with the beds that we add at a low marginal cost to existing facilities. That brings the per diem up. So again, healthcare, private contract, and certainly inflation are issues that are going to impact per diem. The last point I would make is we are now in the process of adding several hundred beds to several different facilities, Faribault being the kind of the engine of that expansion as we complete three pay buildings down there this next year. We will again be adding beds a little bit cheaper to the system, which will help. But in the short term, we have to front end, hire, and train those staff. So that's going to skew the per diem in an upward direction. So you're going to see that per diem increase this year at Faribault. With all of the building, all of the traffic, we've added about 15 staff just to monitor the construction. We've had to do the same thing at Stillwater, where we're building a SEG unit. We haven't had that problem up at Moose Lake Will River, where you'll be tomorrow, because it's a minimum facility. But all of those things impact per diem. And but again, in addition to that, I want to jump to the next slide.
Commissioner, Mr. Sturkamp,
Mr. Chair, members, I have to a point of clarification. I thought I had corrected all the charts in the PowerPoint and on the report, but this one is inaccurate. In FY04, it says 7709. That should be 7680. And again, I apologize for that error. That then should be consistent with the other charts in the report and in the rest of the PowerPoint.
That's on the slideshow?
This is on the slideshow on your current page.
So the far left chart.
Stop it. On page six,
strategic and efficient use of resources.
It is right in the bottom, or the
next slide.
I see. Okay.
I apologize for that.
Okay. We have a couple of questions, Commissioner, if you can just hold. Representative Haas, then Hillstrom, then Mullery. And members, I do want to try to conclude the per diem discussion in the next 15 minutes, and so we can, if possible, so we can talk about short-term offenders. Representative Haas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Per diems, are you renting to a private prison?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair and Representative Haas, yes, we are. We are renting beds from the Prairie Correctional Facility out at Appleton, Minnesota. It's owned by Corrections Corporation of America.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Haas,
what price are you paying for that rental?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair and members, it's around $56 a day, I believe, this year. That price compares reasonably favorably with our medium custody institutions.
Are you renting any outstate? Mr. Chair, are you renting any outstate prison?
Mr. Chair, Representative Paz, no, we're not.
Are you renting, Mr. Chair,
Representative Paz,
renting any federal cells?
Mr. Chair, Representative Paz, no, we aren't. We do have some exchange with the federal government. We probably have three or four in their facilities, and they have about 13 in our Oak Park Heights facility.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just was going to ask about the chart and if it's possible to get a chart that looks just like this, actually using the per diem calculation that's in state law.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, we will certainly do that. And I'd like to, let's bounce to the next slide here for a moment and talk about that. Back in, I believe it was 1999 or 2000, when we were having the debate about should we build a private prison or should we add on to existing facilities with respect to managing our debt problem and challenge in the state of Minnesota. This was an issue that came up, and it was primarily driven by the Senate. And we had several private prison companies come to the state of Minnesota, and they threw these per diems out there that were very intriguing, very low. And they claimed that that included debt service. And it was the wishes of the Senate at that time to include all costs with respect to the per diem, not just the daily costs and the health care, which we have historically always been reporting. So we had lots of debate about the value of that. And a determination, or at the end of the day, consistent with what you refer to as state law, and it's absolutely in statute, that total per diem will be included in the performance report, and we have it in the performance report. It also says it will be in the biennial budget documents. And it's our mistake, my mistake. We have never included it in the biennial budget documents. And again, when we get compared to other states, there's a formula and there's a form that we fill out to report our per diem. And it is always the daily cost at the institution, and many of them want health care included. So again, the value of a total per diem, when we're sizing it up against the way everybody else reports, it's apples to oranges. So at that discussion, and I was very involved in that debate back in 1999 and 2000, it was agreed that we would report it in the performance report, but other documents or other entities that ask for our per diem, obviously, we'll report what they want. So the primary document that this was reported in was the corrections yearbook. Unfortunately, about a year and a half ago, they decided to quit publishing, but we would report things like utility costs, food costs, daily food costs. It really was a corrections yearbook, and we would report our daily per diem. That was broken down by daily costs at the prisons and, in most cases, health care. There have been other publications that have looked at daily costs for offenders, and we report what they ask for. But with the legislature, historically, we have generally only included our daily costs and health care. And I, by the way, I'd remind you that health care includes all chemical dependency, all sex offender treatment, and all mental health treatment. So it's way more than just health care. And however, we would report in our, again, my memory was our performance report, but rest assured going forward, it will also, the total per diem will be included in biennial budget documents. But for the purposes of comparing us to other state entities out there, we really need to try to compare apples to apples, so we continue to report just the daily cost and health care costs.
I'd like, maybe at this point, before we move on to Representative Moore, shed some light on this.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. Per diem issue has been around for years, and I think what the legislature really needs to do is they need to set a standard, and if they go by the standard that is currently set in law, then I think corrections should abide by that, so we keep getting the constant information, the same information every year. And as Deputy Commissioner Benson said, this was looked at, I think, about 5 or 6 years ago. There was a joint hearing with the Senate on the issue because it was based on a report that came out from the Bureau of Justice Statistics. And it's Alan Beck there. And Beck, what he does is he tries to compare apples to apples. And at that time, corrections was number one in their per diem. And Beck's study, he would incorporate not only the facility costs, but also the costs for the central office costs, like they have on here, 65%. And I believe he did include capital, but I'm not sure on that. We can double check. But so that's a little history of it. And like I said, I think it would help the legislature once you establish what you want, then it should be consistent throughout the year so that we can benchmark it. Then you will have a way of looking at the past and seeing the increases or the decreases in some cases.
Well, let me ask you, Mr. Carger, before we go to Representative Morby, wouldn't that be problematic if what the commissioner is saying is then how do you compare oranges to oranges? If the legislature seems to be fond of looking at other states and comparing what things cost, that's a good thing, but how would we do that?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think that's it's a good point, and I think we would, this is one way of doing it, to be consistent. Alan Beck from the Bureau of Justice Statistics, I think he comes out with this, and Mr. Storkamp may correct me, about every 3 or 4 years, and he tries to include all this, and we could, maybe set a standard to go with what he includes. We were using the Corrections Yearbook, as Deputy Commissioner Benson said. This was stopped a couple of years ago. I actually called them, and they said one of the reasons they weren't getting the correct information. Every state was doing it differently. Corrections will bring up the example of Louisiana. I believe they include their health care costs through the Department of Human Services with their charity hospitals. But Alaska, who was ranked number one in some cases, included their bonding costs when we called Alaska in their per diem request. So, just some food for thought. It's a complicated issue.
Mr. Chair.
Representative was next, and then we'll come back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And basically, as Mr. Carter knows, I tried to get information beginning in November on this, and you were constantly in touch with them trying to get it. I don't understand why we can't keep one record. Other agencies and businesses and do keep a one record in accordance with what the national standard is, but I certainly want all the information, everything, bonding, as I told Mr. Carger, bonding, everything, central office, everything involved has to be considered. But I did have, one of my questions was already, the first part was asked by Representative Hawes, who was also going into this, but I think it's interesting, why are we paying $56 a day to Appleton when we were only paying $9 a day to the counties or something like that? I mean, maybe it's a little bit more cost, but it seems pretty inappropriate that we're taking advantage of local governments that way and paying pretty good money to a private institution.
Molly, we're going to talk about the short-term offenders in a few minutes here, so maybe we should just hold that and let Representative Hillstrom...
I'll be brief, Mr. Chair. I don't have a problem with the Department of Corrections keeping track however they need to, but if the legislature does go to the point of putting it in statute, we should at least get the information. Maybe there's a two charts instead of one or something along those lines, but when we want to compare from state to state, I don't have an issue with them using whatever standard those people want for reporting, but we should either ask for this or we should take it out of the statute.
Mr. Chair and representatives, obviously will comply with your wishes, but I would caution that if we are reporting one way and everybody else is reporting another way, and again, if we want to have that private prison debate again in this legislature, I believe personally that's where this path takes us. Right back to, you know, $99 a day, and the privateers are going to come in here and tell you, well, we can do it even with debt service for $70 a day or $75 a day. So that was the, I mean, that was our challenge back in the around 2000. And I believe that the Ellen Beck report was even earlier than 2000. That was my first year in the legislature. I'll never forget that. And we were the ones who had the highest per diem in the nation. And you know, my predecessors made the point that, well, we have more expensive programming, and therefore, then we got into the value of the programs in 1997, and the private, public-private prison debate started in 98, 99, and 2000. So we have quite a history with this issue, and you're all absolutely right that it really would be nice if there were one standard reporting system. But I can tell you things about, there are systems out there that don't include education. There is a state that does not include public employees' fringe benefits in their per diem. There are several states that don't have health care included because they do get it through the university system. And there are states that include some bonding, some that include asset preservation, but not anything other than that. So it's all over the map. And the other thing that we have tried to do to, I think, make this cost more meaningful is put it in the context of what is Minnesota paying per taxpayer for its correction system. And I think that that really does have value. And Governing Magazine does report that annually. It reports it for both just state spending and state and local correction spending. And as you know, we wheel that chart out every year that compares us to Wisconsin. And our per taxpayer cost for your correction system here in Minnesota is very, very low. I think we're 37th or 38th in the nation. Just state spending were in the high 40s. So the taxpayers of Minnesota get a pretty good deal for the correction system that they have. And we also, as you know, incarcerate fewer people per capita than any state except Maine. New Hampshire, I believe, is up there now, too. And that's driven by, I think, sound correctional policy. We try to manage corrections at the lowest possible level. We've got a couple slides left, and then we can move on to short-term and go back to the...
Commissioner, one moment, please. We just have one question here before you move on. Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going back to, the issue is complicated, and I think we all agree with that and understand some of the frustrations. But what kind of inmate is predominantly at Appleton? Is it a medium security? Is that facility? Is that what it is?
Commissioner Benson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Eastland, yes, it is a level 3 medium custody inmate. But I'd also add to that they have requirements and standards around who they will take. So it adversely impacts the rest of our system from a healthcare perspective. They won't take offenders that have systemic healthcare problems like diabetes and severe asthmatics, hip and joint problems, and they won't take discipline problems. If there's too much of a problem, they send them back, and they won't take expensive mental health folks out there, and that's part of the contract. We all understand that, and they, quite frankly, have been doing a very good job for us. But it does adversely throw some of those costs back on the agency. And I want to correct myself. Right now we're paying $55 a day at Appleton. I think that cost is going to go up to $57. We're in the process of renegotiating that contract. But in addition to those costs, there are other central office costs, transportation costs, all of those costs that we apply to that total per diem.
Mr. Chair, one just one.
Representative Eastman.
But we got into the expenses, the capitalized expenses. But the $55 a day from the Appleton side, that would include their capitalized cost as well, correct?
Okay.
Mr. Chair and Representative Eastland, I'm only guessing, but yes, I would assume that their capital cost is wrapped up in that.
Yeah, please continue.
Okay. Very quickly here, just on a couple of other charts that we're proud of. The middle chart on this screen, the percent of offenders involved in programming, we have continued to maintain a very low unprogrammed rate in our system. We've been very fortunate with mentors, chemical dependency treatment, education, sex offender treatment, support service jobs to have an idleness rate get down around somewhere between 11 and 15%. And that keeps us out of a lot of trouble in the state of Minnesota. The last part there is worker compensation costs. We have put a great deal of energy into safety in our correctional system the last 5-6 years. We've worked closely with the Department of Labor and Industry. We've hired a safety director. We've got a safety strategic plan. And we are managing to drive our workers' comp costs down. And we've got a positive trend line there. We sort of touched on the per diem page here, so we're just going to conclude our report here. I think we've got 3 or 4 slides left.
Okay. Mr. Chair and members.
Sir, Camp.
The annual performance statistics, again, this is a collage of information that covers everything from adult discipline convictions, juvenile discipline, offender capacity and populations at each facility, idleness numbers that Commissioner Benson had talked about, as well as the MinCorps operational statistics, and we've got a couple charts here. But they're really detailed for you in the report, so take some time to review those and be happy to respond to any questions there. And again, I mentioned the recidivism rates. The definitions for recidivism really came out of a legislative auditor study back in the late 90s. They came out with a reconviction and reincarceration numbers that we should be using on a consistent basis for a 3-year period. Recidivism methodology changes from state to state, but in Minnesota, we're consistent with that direction that the auditor has set for us. And you can see that we've increased slightly in the last couple of years. I do want to note that one of our key components of our recidivism project is the BCA data. And as the legislature has funded some of their efforts to improve their data, you're going to see some changes in our recidivism rates because there's better information available to do recidivism on. In addition, between 2004 and 2005, we've enhanced our process at the Department of Corrections to improve the quality of data that goes behind the recidivism rates. So some of that increase between 2004 and 2005 is, again, a change in methodology and reporting process. This year, we're excited also to report on juvenile recidivism. You'll notice that the numbers are fairly high, but I want to note that the juvenile offenders at Red Wing, again, they're committed usually multiple times prior to coming to Department of Corrections. This is really the backstop for the state of Minnesota. Many of them come in with significant mental health issues as well as several other issues. So while these may look high compared to the adult ones, they really are comparable for that type of population that's out there. In the report, there's actually a lot of breakdowns of the juvenile area. I didn't go into those for today's discussion. But again, it's available, I think, on pages 29 and forward. The last area of our report is on mental health programming.
Mr. Chair and yes, members, by the way, we have the superintendent and another staffer from the Red Wing facility here today. I know you probably don't have time to chat with them, but you will be visiting Red Wing, I think, in a week. and maybe we can follow up on some of those juvenile recidivism statistics during that visit. They're very happy to discuss those with you. The last slide here is the mental health programs, and this is another addition to the report. We believe there would be value in just giving rise to this issue because it is such a critical issue that confronts the agency these days. We talked a lot about the number of folks on psychotropic meds, the number of folks that come to us with mental health issues. And some of the things that we do are kind of laid out in this chart, those participating in group treatment, individual therapy, involved in therapy sessions. In addition to that, we have supportive living units in most of our institutions where those individuals who still can function in the mainstream do, but we have them located kind of front and center so we can keep an eye on them. May have some mentors in there as well. And we do have an inpatient mental health treatment unit at Oak Park Heights. You visited that last Friday. Shakopee, the female facility, has around 10 beds. And the Red Wing facility, and I'm sure we'll spend some time in their mental health unit when we go down there in a week. But it's a critical issue. More and more people are entering the agencies with some level of mental health affliction that really does challenge the agency, and it's also one of those cost drivers.
Commissioner, can you, in the next week or two, I don't know how long it will take, but can you get us a more detailed explanation of the medical costs and all the facilities, breaking down mental health, CD, basic health care, dental? I mean, I don't know. I'm sure you have this somewhere. I don't want to tax you too much, but it seems like this is a driving cost and cost for medications, what kind of vendors you're using, those kinds of things. I think that would be helpful as we discuss per diems and institution costs in the future.
Commissioner? Chair, yes, we have that information available. We really dissect that budget, and we can break that out in a number of different ways, so we'll be happy to provide that.
Okay, now members, we have three people who want to speak, and we were just going to start short-term offenders at a quarter to. Are these questions that that you just need?
Information for later, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Hilster.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you're getting that information, it would be nice if we could get some information on the per diems at each facility. I was noticing on figure one in the report that they updated today that three of the facilities per diems are, you know, considerably higher, sometimes as much as three times as high as some of the other per diems. Mm-hmm. If we could just find out why and...
Commissioner, you'll do that. And Representative Riebling is next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be quick also. On your last slide, I'm really puzzled by the way you're presenting this data because you've got some things included in other things, and it's really hard to break out, or at least it's not easy to see the relationships here of who's just being assessed and then who's going on to get therapy and who's getting which kinds of therapy. So if you could put that in a more, you know, break that out so that we can see those individual components, and then, you know, I think it would be more meaningful.
Ms. Lacombe, why don't we schedule one day again for DOC after we've had a chance to examine other budgets to... I think we'll need a committee meeting to do this. Quickly, Representative Eastland, and then we're going to move on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm on the bottom, page 7, on the recidivism, adult recidivism chart. I guess I'm just curious, the relationship between the bars. You know, you got a reconviction of a new felony, and then you've got a reconviction and reincarceration. What happens to the 11% that, you know, don't get... aren't reincarcerated? Are they going to short-term offender system, or what's happening?
Mr. Chair, Representative Eastland, to be quick, those individuals actually are kept in the court system. They receive a stayed prison sentence, and they could be put in the jail for a short period of time and then probably put on probation as well.
Okay, Mr. Carver, I think why don't you get us started here, and then we'll hear from Commissioner Benson, and then we have some individuals who'd like to talk about the impact of short-term offenders on counties.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a side note for members, too. There should be performance reports on every agency, small You know, it should be a page in the budget books. It'll talk about their key measures and their best practices. Okay, the short-term offenders, Mr. Chair, members, you should have a memo in your packet on the short-term offenders. I just want to go over briefly how this took place. It started in 2003. This is when the state was facing a budget deficit, and the DOC, along with the governor, had a recommendation that short-term offenders, those serving 100 or 6 months or less, be housed at the local units of government, or, you know, the local jails, basically. And at that time, it represented about 200 inmates. The DOC budget, they estimated a savings of $8.79 million for the first two fiscal years of the biennium, that was 04 and 05. And then the tails savings would be about $10 million for the biennium. And members, I think I also handed out the budget page that explained those changes. I also should point out that there's a little history to this. In 1993, this was before my time, the governor and the Department of Corrections had another change item that they recommended that the short-term offenders with 1 year or less be housed in the local jails. And this resulted, I think Representative Murphy was chair at that time, resulted in a report to the legislature in 1994 on short-term offenders. And it's a very interesting report. The library has a copy if anybody wants a little history on this. And it talks about, you know, the county's perspective and the DOC perspective. Both of them, I mean, they put in, you know, some great points to why they should be doing this or why they should not be doing it. But they also came up with some interesting options. In fact, I was reading this last night, and Mr. Chair, I think some of this would even be involved with your reentry initiatives. But they talked about maybe developing a short-term program at Lino Lakes, developing a stateside subsidized state-county operated minimum security facility in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, adjust the sentencing guidelines, development of a regional jail or a DWI facility. Just some food for thought on that. But back to the memo, they projected 200 short-term offenders per year on an average. You'll see on the second page of the memo that in July of 2003, that was the estimate. 2004, that number went to 242. And 2005, the number went to 297 short-termers. And in 2006, the latest data that we have from the Department of Corrections, they're showing $319 individuals out there. Now, I also did a calculation that if the legislature was to fully fund this at $55 a day, that's the average jail per diem, the cost would be somewhere around $4.815 million. And that includes the additional cost of $1.2 million that's already out there that the legislature appropriated. I just want to highlight, too, the governor does have a recommendation out there that increases it by $2.19 million. You've heard the current per diem. It started out at around $12 a day. I think it's somewhere around $9 per day now. With the governor's recommendation, it's going to bring it somewhere around $30 a day. So, members, it's just a brief history and what's happening with the short-term offenders.
Thank you, Mr. Carter. Commissioner Benson, do you want to maybe take this 2 minutes and give the DOC perspective?
Mr. Chair and members, I will, and I've got two other staffers here that got just some interesting numbers around this topic, but as you know, this is a very sensitive issue for both the state and our local partners out there, one that obviously didn't go down very well here 4 years ago when it was implemented. And I think we've got, with all due respect to everybody, we've got a little bit of a mess in terms of how we're managing these offenders. They are still committed to the commissioner, which is a real problem for us. We do the paperwork. We admit them into the system. We never see the people. And on the other end, we're required to do all the release planning in 87 different counties, and we never meet with the people. So in a day and a time when we're getting together talking about sound reentry process. We're doing some things that I don't think any of us should be very proud of. But we're trying to manage these people at the state level when they're located in probably 80 different county jails, and it just doesn't work well. So our issue is the language. Obviously, the local jails and counties are irritated because they believe that the money isn't right. It's $9 a day, and it's a cost that was shifted back to them. The state would make the argument that 30 years ago, under the old Community Corrections Act, anybody under 5 years was kept in the community. If they wanted to send them to prison, they paid for it. That deal kind of went out the window when guidelines came into effect, but the counties did hang on to the money. Old deal, it doesn't really apply anymore. I think we've got to we've got to get around this issue. We've got to try to figure out a better way. We begin to dialogue with the county partners on some different possibilities, and all of those things, Gary, that you just mentioned, I think got to be on the table again. And I always hate committees and reports, but maybe it's time to, in the interim, depending on what happens this session, take another look at this. Some ideas that we have are around the notion of regional jails. We've batted this around for the 11 years I've been here, and again, with the discussion around reentry, there may be some room for using regional jails for reentry purposes as well. And there are some jails out there that are expanding, they've got additional beds, and if we could get them to provide the service for a reasonable per diem, in other words, give them a computer, let them admit them into the system, and manage some of that release planning, at least we'd be, short-termers would be in the region of the state that they were going to be released to. I don't think, and I will argue till I leave, that it makes zero sense to bring these short-term offenders, allow them to penetrate the system to the extent that people who are never going home do, and a month, 3 weeks, 2 months, 4 months later, turn them around and try to re-enter them into the community that they came from is so inconsistent with everything we know about reentry that I don't think we want to go there. But I do think there's room in the middle, and I think we ought to look at that. I'd like to ask Colin Gao to say a couple of words about the mess that we've created for his institution at St. Cloud with respect to trying to manage this group.
So can you introduce yourself for the record and just take a couple of minutes, because we have some people also who traveled some distance to get here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Colin Gao. I'm Associate Warden at the Correctional Facility in St. Cloud. The Correctional Facility in St. Cloud is the intake facility for the Department of Corrections. In that capacity, we process all new admissions. Calendar year 06, we processed over 4,400 new admissions. 960 of those are short-term offenders. When we process a short-term offender into the system, it's done by fax, by telephone. We have no body. We have no one to talk to. We are really hamstrung in our ability to get accurate information. It's a convoluted, difficult process. In addition to processing in that group of short-term offenders, we release, process out, 981 short-term offenders in calendar year 06. That represents 78% of all the releases we process out of our facility. As Mr. Benson has said, processing a short-term offender with a release plan is again, very difficult. You have no offender to talk to, you can't get any information from the offender as to where they are going to go, where is a good place, where is a bad place, where have they been. This is all done via, again, fax, telephone, back and forth between 80 to 82 different jail administrators. It is not a good process, and it creates a lot of additional work for the staff at our facility.
Thank you, Mr. Gao. Mr. Mayor, did you want to make a quick comment here?
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Ken Mers. I'm the director of the Community Services Division. Mr. Colin Gao and I were given the responsibility to try and implement this short-term offender program when it was put in back in 2004. In order to do that, we convened a working group that consisted of all jail administrators, sheriffs, representatives from the Sheriff's Association, the executive director of the Sheriff's Association, as well as local community corrections officials, in order to try and come up with some type of a system where we can make this work. As Deputy Commissioner Benson said, it's not a good situation. It's not a good situation for anybody, but we tried to come up with some way of making it work as efficiently as possible. I just want to talk a little bit about the numbers. When we projected the 200 a day back in the beginning, those were solid numbers based on our data systems, which showed how many offenders were in our system that had come in with less than 6 months to serve at the time. Since the implementation of this legislation, we've seen several things happen. One, the offenders themselves who are on probation, who violate, are choosing and going to the court and saying to execute my sentence. Go ahead and execute it because now I can serve it on the local level. And when I'm done at the local level, I'll be done. I won't have an extended probationary period to continue on in the community. We've noticed that attorneys are using this law now as a means of plea bargaining. In order to save time within the courts and so forth, they use this law to plea bargain and have the sentences executed. We see that there are judges who have now see this as a viable option, that if they have an individual who they don't necessarily want to send to prison, but they do want to give them some time, they will use this and use this type of a law in order to have the guy serve some time at least on the local level. So these are all factors that over the course of the 3 years has made this population grow to that point where it's now 300, averaging around 319 a day.
Thank you. We have questions for the three of you, but if I'd like to bring up our speakers now, who and I don't know who's here actually. Is Dave Bellows here from Dakota County? Okay. How about Paul Wilson from the Olmsted County Commissioner? Okay. And Paul Bullmaster from Rice County. If you could introduce yourselves for the record and take about 5 minutes each for the committee.
I'm Paul Bullmaster. I'm the Rice County attorney. I'm here to talk about the impact that short-term offenders have from a county attorney's perspective. It's not just a cost factor for us, but it is an issue where we have probationers who fail and are looking at having a sentence executed. We now have a situation where they're, I think one of the DOC representatives pointed out, not really looking at the consequence of going to prison any longer. They're looking at staying in their community, being in the same situation they were before they failed probation, and then at that point making it easier for them to maintain what they've been used to, which is county jail time. I think that doesn't serve justice well. I think many judges would disagree that they think that's a good thing. One of the things that we have probation for is to keep people in line, to have that anvil hanging over their head, that if you fail, if you do not do what the court has told you to do on probation, if you don't get on the right track, we will send you to prison. That is why we have a prison system, is to have punishment. If we take that out of the system, I think we lose a lot of the persuasion of having that anvil over their head to stay on the straight and narrow. I think for the most part, from the public defender's position, it has become a factor in plea negotiations, where they sometimes may stretch out a pretrial hold, knowing what the presumptive sentence under the guideline is. They might not want a speedy trial. They might want to slow things down. They might want to use up some of that time, because they will get credit for jail time. If you have an 18-month sentence, you may not mind it taking a year before your guy gets to trial. And it does affect our system. It does slow down our caseload. And I think that is a factor that should be considered, is the cost of slowing down, clogging up our system with people who are trying to manipulate their sentence in order to stay in local facilities rather than have what a lot of people do fear, being transported to St. Cloud, being taken into a prison system. That does have an impact on a person. They may have been in their local jail. They may have been through the local jail booking. But it is different when you go to prison, and they know it's different. They may still have the same label of having an executed felony on their record, but I think that it does make a difference as to the psychological impact on them, whether they're going to prison, real prison, or staying in their local facility. I don't know that we really want to encourage, through our sentencing, or the sentence that are served, where they're served, encourage manipulation of our system and allow, to some degree, defendants to decide where they're going to serve their time. I do think these are individuals that should be in prison, because the guidelines either say they should be in prison or judges executed their sentence because they failed. They met the Austin factors laid out by the court. They failed probation. These are a different population than the population in general that we see in our county jails. These are people who have shown they cannot be on probation. They don't fit in our county system. They need to be sent to prison. And by keeping them locally, I think you're mixing two different populations that, you know, don't belong together.
Mr. Bowmaster, do you have a recommendation to the legislature?
Well, it was brought up that, you know, 30 years ago, that's what used to happen. 30 years ago, we didn't have sentencing guidelines. We had a parole board. I don't know that it's good to get the worst of both worlds. I think that, you know, if we have this system, we should live with the system where we have sentencing guidelines and we follow them. And if you are committed to the Commissioner of Correction, the state has that responsibility to take on their prisoners and deal with them appropriately. I think that, at the very least, paying for the cost would be a nice start. It was talked about the partnership, local partnership. We do work with DOC locally, and it's usually a very good working relationship. As partners, though, when you have a windfall, everybody shares that profit. For the last 3-4 years, we have, as a counties, have not shared, but shared in the, not shared in the profits, but shared in the losses, the deficit, in helping balance that budget to, I think, the tune of about $18 million. So of that $1 billion cash on hand, one-time money, it's probably fitting that we share in that windfall, at least to the $18 million that we now are looking at having incurred. And then going forward, having that cost, which the state, under the Department of Corrections and under sentencing guidelines, has responsibility for, take that responsibility and find those beds wherever they can. I don't know that it's necessarily important that they be, you know, in one county jail versus another. If there is an overcrowding problem or a problem with where do we put these prisoners, and I think DOC has started to look at that, maybe it is better to shop around and see if we can find a better placement somewhere else for those individuals.
Thank you, Mr. Bowmaster. Mr. Wilson?
Yes, good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Paul Wilson. I'm a commissioner from Olmsted County, Minnesota, and also first vice president of the Association of Minnesota Counties. I would say that I'm here today to share with you and to report to you that the partnership between, I would say, county government and state government has certainly been strained on this issue. Counties have always come to the fore when needing to be a good partner, and we certainly will continue to do so. We know that good governance requires two things, good policy decision and also allocating appropriate funds to carry out. It's the latter part that we've had certainly the concern over, is the appropriation or the allocation of resources to meet the need that we have. We all hear a lot about tax relief, tax reform, but gets down to tax responsibility. Whom is going to undertake and take care of the issues that have been identified? Counties accepted the state offenders in 2003 to help the state mitigate the state prison housing crunch that existed at that time. The actual numbers, however, of the short-term population have far exceeded the original estimates. And, of course, the funding to support the local costs has not been commensurate with the population that has been identified. The negative budget consequences this has had on county's ability to absorb the shift of the state responsibility onto the property taxes. I would also point out that statewide, this is an approximately $18.6 million onto the property taxes to help balance the state budget over the last 4 years. Therefore, counties have contributed, in essence, if you will, to the $1 billion that has come into the bank. How does this affect Olmsted County? Olmsted County has had to absorb over the past 3 years approximately $900,000. In our big picture of our budget, where does this, what else might I compare this to? Perhaps I could compare this to the five probation agents, that we've had to lay off of. And at the cost of $180,000 per mile of road maintenance, this comes to about 5 miles of two-lane overlay that we've had to delay. The first step in property tax relief is to recognize the responsibilities that all counties bear and how the costs for these duties have come directly out of the property tax pockets. Our county board, for the first time in its history this year, went beyond what the county administrator recommended for a tax levy. Since 2003, we have been over 8%. This year, it was nearly 10%. This was not expanding anything. This was not starting any new things. It was either maintaining or in perhaps still continuing with cuts in various departments. I would submit to you today that Olmsted County logged 6,783 bed days for short-term offenders in 2006. The Department of Corrections paid $9.42 per day to Olmsted County. Olmsted County has had to pay an average, if you will, of $55 a day to board detainees in other jurisdictions. This doesn't include such things as transportation. $55 a day is a market value rate. The actual average cost of housing a detainee in 2006 was approximately $102 per day. I submit these concerns to you and certainly look for full restoration and restoration that is appropriate to counties.
Thank you, Mr. Thank Wilson. And is Mr. Bellows here yet from Dakota County? No? Okay. Just members, before we open it up for questions, I'm going to pass out the sheet again for the tour to Willow River tomorrow. If some members want, about half the committee seems like they're going. If anyone still wants to go, please sign up. Are there questions at this point to Mr. Wilson or Mr. Bowmaster? And then there were two members representing Hillstrom and Haas who had questions, I believe, of DOC. This is
of Mr. Carver.
Of Mr. Carver.
Mr. Chair?
Representative
Haas. I could just generally throw them out because I don't know if there's questions that really need answering. But I did speak a while back, a few meetings ago, if you remember, to the right to a slow trial. And they said they'd prefer not to be, we had other testimony here that they would prefer not to go, it is better and harder to be in a small county jail than it is in a great big, easy to bunk in large state jail. And I've been worked in and have volunteered in the jails, and I know I could take a book and spend a couple days in Stearns County Jail and be really comfortable. And I don't even like driving by the state prison. I roll up my window and lock the door because it's a pretty dangerous space to be. But there is, I think, in the long term, when you're doing that trial, there's some things happening that we don't have control of. And I also think there's probably some populations that you're getting more of because people have good hearts. That they would start thinking, I really don't want to put this person there, maybe because they have special behavioral problems that are not their fault or whatever. Also, I think when they're booked on a short-term felon by the state and they're put in the county jail, they don't have the programs that are available to them on the state level. and I don't think they have the STS programs, and I don't think they have the caution for possibly early release. I think when they're booked there for good, and there's not much the county can do about it. You can't release them, and you got a date for booking. You want to verify that or not? Now, it doesn't make much difference, but it's a mess.
Thank you, Representative Haas. Representative Hilstrom, you had a question, Mr. Carter?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I just want to make sure I understand the governor's budget correctly in that he is only allocating $30 per day for these offenders, up to 300 offenders, and then once it goes over 300, then the amount that they get per offender goes down across the board. And I believe we're already at 319, is that correct?
Mr. Carter?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hilstrom, you are correct. If the number goes up to 319, it would drop that $30 down.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hilstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's my understanding that there is already Anoka County, Stearns County, Dakota County, and Arrowhead Regional Tri-County, whatever, I don't know the rest of the name, who are currently leasing bed space from other places because they're so overcrowded that they're now paying, you know, $50, $60, $70 for other people and only then getting reimbursed by the county or by the state for $9. If we could get from somewhere a comprehensive list of who is leasing bed space and what really is the problem, because if we are only compounding this, I mean, maybe if nothing else, we need to put in a provision that if you don't have bed space, you can, you know, refuse.
Okay. Representative Mulry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just to follow up on what Representative Hilstrom said, I've talked to County Commissioners Hennepin. You may have talked to Ramsey, but they have judges who aren't sentencing people that should be in the local jails or workhouse that are rented out right now because the state's requiring them to be in there. But I did have two questions. The first one was for Mr. Carter, and I didn't get. You said if we did it at the regular rate, and I didn't know what you meant by regular rate, the cost to the state is, I thought you said $4 million. Is that $4 million correct, and what did you mean by regular rate?
Mr. Carter.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Representative Mulry, the regular rate I was referring to was the average of $55 per day, and I know that varies by county. I mean, some are a little less. I think I spoke to your county, Hennepin County, I think they're somewhere around $80 or $85, and for their per diem.
And then, what was the total?
The total would be $4.815 million in new funding. That is my estimate. Because, and Mr. Chair, Representative Mulley, they're already in the base that the legislature appropriated in 2003 was a little over $1.2 million a year, and that's where that $9 or $12 comes from. Currently, that they're paying.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My other question was, and I can't.
Representative Mulley.
I think it was Mr. Wilson.
Correct.
You said the actual cost is $102 per person. I was wondering, that's the highest I've heard. Anyway,
well, that's an average.
Mr. Wilson.
Yes. Thank you. Yeah, that's an average that we have from information from our county, what the actual cost is, because there would be other factors that might not be included. There could be some people on the high end. It's kind of doing a balancing, if you will.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick comment, and then I wanted to ask Commissioner Wilson how he reacts to the regional jails idea and so on. But before I do that, I just wanted to say in response to Representative Haas talking about you could sit there with a book for a couple of days. In my experience, there are some inmates who feel the opposite because there isn't any real programming often for them in the county jail. Usually it's somebody who's been there before to the state prison system. A lot of times people would rather be in prison because they can do something. So I don't know how the net effect of that falls out, but it can go both ways. But I wanted to just ask Commissioner Wilson for any suggestion structurally other than the financial issue, if you have any ideas.
Well, it's pretty hard to get away, Representative, from the financial issue because that's always a concern that counties have when you're doing anything jointly or trying to pull something together. I suppose it makes sense on a grander scheme, but you're going to get into the financial part that needs to be addressed at the front end.
Representative Olin, are you done? Representative Olin?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Ballmaster, or Mr. Wilson, or both. correct me if I'm wrong, what your real goal today would be is twofold. One, to recover the money that we've already lost, and I said we because I'm a former Pennington County attorney, so that we've already lost in the last years by one-time funding, and two, to get up, if you're going to stay with this system, to get to the $55 amount at least. Is this correct?
Mr. Bowmaster?
Mr. Chair, yes, that is correct. That is exactly what I think would be fair. I don't know that that's an unreasonable request. Again, given that, you know, we work as partners in providing services to the citizens of Minnesota, and particularly in our counties, this was a real shift in the tax burden and who pays for felons in the state of Minnesota. There had been a shift in our system some years back that put that cost on the state. And now it's being, in the last few years, it's been shifted back to property taxes. And that's really the issue. And there is a policy issue as well. Do we really want, from my perspective as a county attorney, do we really want decisions of pleading guilty or not guilty, which are serious decisions, and I think we all work with a big heart in the criminal justice system. We all want to see the right thing done. But I think that it's not really something that should be a factor, that a prisoner is deciding, should I plead quickly because I want to get some programming, and I know if I only have 12 months or 180 days, I won't get any unless I plead early in the process in order to get to a prison facility. Or do I want to drag it out because I'm really comfortable? I've been in the county jail before. I'm comfortable with that system in my community. I'm going to drag it out. Do we really want that to be a factor in our criminal justice system? And should it be a factor in our criminal justice system? So I think there's a policy question as well as the basic cash issue and, you know, what taxes are paying for this. Is it property taxes versus the state through other revenues, general fund revenues?
Yeah, as a quick follow-up comment, as a comment to the policy issue, I have watched people in court as a county attorney sit there and count the number of days. Can't do it today. 2 weeks, a month later, yeah, now I can do it. I've watched that happen, so I know it does.
Representative Bigham, we're running, and then Representative Mallory, we're running a little short here. But
One quick comment, Mr. Is it Bowmaster?
Yes.
Okay. I work in the Hennepin County Attorney's Office, but I think you make a good point about the policy side of your concern, because if they are figuring out the system and if, you know, they're counting the days and they go back into their community, they're higher, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, they're higher, there's a higher chance that they're going to reoffend, and that bogs down our system as well. So, I mean, I think this is something that we need to address immediately.
Mr. Chair, I think this is a statewide issue, and I didn't mean to make it sound like this is just Rice County. I do think it's a policy issue statewide, and, you know, it shouldn't be whether you're arguing for the low end of the box or the high end of the box because you're counting the days to see whether that person is going to be a short-term offender or be going to the state system. I don't encourage it. Obviously, I don't think that would be an appropriate basis for arguing for the top end of the box just to get that extra day or month so that they go to the state system versus, you know, burdening the local system. I think that's completely inappropriate, and I don't think any prosecutor would do that. I would hope they wouldn't do that, just as I would hope that, you know, defense attorneys aren't arguing for higher sentences so they can go to prison, which is really, if you look at that, it's a really perverse result that you'd have a defense attorney arguing to get his guy into the state system for a higher sentence. That's just wrong, and it shouldn't be, as a matter of policy, something that is a factor in our sentencing process.
We're going to go to Representative Mallory and Lily, and then we're going
Mr.
to...
Mr. Chairman, a real quick question. It's either for Commissioner Benson or Mr. Carter. If we're forcing this onto the counties, and it's costing them from $102, $88 in Hennepin, Ramsey, I've heard, is higher than Hennepin. Why are we talking about not only 9 and 30, but somebody saying, oh, they'll be fine at 55 if it's costing them twice that, why are they fined at 55 when we're forcing it on them? And I don't know which...
Commissioner Benson?
Mr. Chair and Representative Mulry, we have had pretty good luck renting county jail beds around the state for our ICWIC crews, and certainly our contract at Prairie is currently 55. It might be 56, it might be 58, depending on inflation and those things. But county per diems, like state per diems, are all over the map. Mm. You really have to take a look at what's included to understand. But again, when we come to a county jail with looking for work release beds or ICWIC beds, and we're in 8 or 9 different county jails, we have no trouble with $55 a day. A couple of quick points I want to make. Number one, no one should be suffering from the delusion that if these short-termers come to prison, they're going to get into a program. We don't even get them through orientation for 45 days, and in many cases, the short-termer is ready to go home at that point in time. And number two, if the decision is made to increase the $55 a day, the state is going to be looking for some other way of managing these offenders. Again, we can't sit here and have a sound dialogue around a sound correctional reentry practice, but then say this makes total sense that the state is going to manage these people in 80 jails around the state without ever interacting with them. There's a disconnect there that we all have to recognize as well. And we are very willing to look at other possibilities with respect to how to deal with this issue. But there's going to be an upside and a downside to any solution that I think that we all come to, and I think our local partners need to understand that as well.
Commissioner Benson, there's the money end of it, and then there's the policy end of it. It's quite clear, and I hope we can address the money end of it this legislative session. But I would like you, the Department of Corrections, to actually come up with some ideas here. I mean, Mr. Carter was talking about, when was that?
1994.
The 1994, when the Stiloc happened before. I would like the department to come up with some recommendations, and I'd rather not wait to the interim. If we have to, we will. But I think you could tell us what you think works, and then we can debate that. Mr. Carter, did you have a comment on Representative Mullery's question?
Right, yes. Mr. Chair, Representative Mullery, on that, the $55 per day, I think that also is an average that Sentencing Guidelines uses in their fiscal notes. And I believe they received that number. I think there was a jail survey of 1 or 2 years ago. That's the average number of the county jails. And, Mr. Chair, on your point, too, you've already had us doing some research, and some of the states are doing some, you know, creative things in this area. One of the things is revocation centers that we talked about, which may be something to consider.
We're going to go a few minutes over, members, if you could just hold on. Representative Lilly and then Hillstrom real quickly, because we're past our adjournment time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just real quickly, and we can certainly discuss this as we go along. My concerns are a little bit like Mr. Olin's, the shifting, the costs, and I just think that the real costs are probably closer to what the testifiers are saying, the $100 mark. Well, if you look at Ramsey County, multiply that out in same numbers for Hennepin County, you're talking $1.5 million, you know, with that gap from the $30 or whatever we're talking that the governor's proposed in his budget to the $100 and some. So someone's eating it. We're eating that in property tax. We're all out door knocking this year, and we're hearing, you know, our property tax, this and this, you know, people, levies aren't passing. So anyways, I think we need to look at that. And I just always hated, when I was on the city council, I just hated being, shifted on, if you will. And anyways, thank you.
Representative Hillstrom, quick comment or question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to make the comment to Representative Mullery that it's one thing to rent open bed spaces to someone for $55 because you have an open bed and you have overhead costs anyways. But when your jails are already full, the real cost probably is likely to be $100 and you aren't recouping anything. So I think we really need to look at this forcing piece when people don't have room.
Can I add a brief comment? The $55 amount, of course, is a marginal empty bed cost or space, if you will. So when you obviously occupy that, you have the significant issues in the expense increase. So that's why we get to the 102.
Mr. Wilson, Mr. Bowmaster, thank you for coming down today. Members, if you're going on the tour tomorrow, I've been advised that we will be outside a little bit, believe it or not. So dress warmly. Representative Eastland.
What time are you going to actually arrive at Willow River?
We'll get that information out to you. I think it's around 2:15.
Yeah, it's possible that I may be able to come, but I would drive. But I have another meeting.
We'll get that out to you. Thank you, members. The meeting is adjourned.